The Lord be with you.
And with your
spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel is written to us by Mark. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him, and he stayed close to the sea. Now one of the synagogue officials named Jairus came forward. Seeing him, he fell at his feet, and he pleaded earnestly with him, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Please come, lay your hands on her, that she may get well and live." He went off with him, and a large crowd followed and pressed upon him. Now along the way, there was a woman who was afflicted with hemorrhages for 12 years. She had suffered greatly at the hands of many doctors and had spent all that she had, but she was not helped, but only grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. She said, "If I but touch his clothes, I shall be cured." Immediately, her flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Now Jesus, aware at once that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd, and he said, "Who has touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "Jesus, you see how the crowd is pressing upon you. Why would you ask who touched me?" And he looked around to see who had done it. The woman, realizing what had happened, approached in fear and trembling. She fell down before Jesus and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace and be cured of your affliction." Now, while he was still speaking, people from the synagogue official's house arrived and they said, "Your daughter has died. Don't trouble the teacher any longer." Disregarding the message that was reported, Jesus said to the synagogue official, "Don't be afraid, just have faith." He did not allow anyone to accompany him inside, except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they arrived at the house, he caught sight of a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. He went in and he said to them, "Why all this commotion and crying? The child is not dead, but asleep." And they ridiculed him, and he put them all out. He took along the child's father and mother and those who were with him. And he entered the room where the child was. He took the child by the hand, and he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means in his language, "Little girl, rise up." The girl, a child of 12, arose immediately and walked around. And at that, they were utterly astounded. He gave strict orders that no one should know this, and said that they should give her something to eat. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord.
Well, this is certainly an interesting gospel, filled with so many details. And I'm going to use it to, I hope, intrigue and interest you to study Scripture a little more, because that's the only way you're going to make sense out of a rather complex reading like this. And we must be honest that Catholics don't tend to study Scripture very much. So let's see if this can tell you how it could be very interesting if you're willing to see that it's all symbolic. And I don't think I have one point, because this gospel doesn't have one point. It has about 15 minor points. Let me make them very quickly. First of all, this story, which is found also in Matthew and in Luke, is in three different versions. Now, if you believe that the Bible is perfectly historically accurate, well, which version do you believe? Matthew, Mark's, or Luke's? Because they're all different. So that tells us right there that historical accuracy is never the point. It's the point that the rearranging of relationships wants to make. And this is a most interesting one, and this part is in all three accounts. We have Jesus setting out to do one thing. He's interrupted. He accepts the interruption, which most of us aren't very good at. He makes the most of the interruption and then goes back to the original storyline. It seems to me that already is a lesson. That if we'd be honest, very often it is in the interruptions from what we're about that God breaks in. So, here's the second point that's rather clear in both of these accounts. Even though we've made Jesus into someone who's correcting sin and evil, that really isn't evident in the Gospels. He's much more, as in both of these cases, not going to where the sin is so he can correct it. He's going to where the suffering is. That's the story of his whole life. Now, if Jesus is the image of God, then what does this tell us? God cares about human suffering. He never says, well, put up with it, and you'll get rewarded in heaven. No, he's concerned about human pain, human suffering now. Very telling. I don't know how we missed that point. And we made the whole gospel about the next world instead of alleviating suffering in this world. Thank God, America's response to the horrible things that have been happening on the border are showing that Christianity is waking up, that we care about human suffering now and human injustice now. But at any rate, back to the storyline. Then this woman, afflicted with a hemorrhage for 12 years, it's sort of a critique of the medical system. She had suffered greatly at the hands of many doctors, and had spent all that she had. And into the midst of this comes a doctor who apparently still does home visits. He doesn't set up an office and say, come to me. He goes out to them and offers, yes, we have to use the phrase, free health care for the poor, for the ordinary. It's amazing that the gospel, which is so much about Jesus' healing ministry, has produced a religion that thinks health care should be a privilege for the few and for the rich. I myself am dealing with a lot of doctors these days, and I have the luxury of health care, and most people don't, and I don't take it for granted. Most people in human history just die. They didn't know what they were dying from. They didn't know what the cause of their pain was. They just die. I'm going to die and you're going to die, but because of all my doctors, I'm probably going to know what I'm dying from. I guess that gives you a little bit of comfort. Second telling thing in this interruption story is that Jesus doesn't really heal her. She heals herself. She takes all of the initiative. She touches him. And he's happy to let power flow through him toward her. She's a little bit afraid that she's stolen his power. But he simply says, daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. See, faith isn't magic from God's side. It's trust from our side.
Yeah.
It's saying reality, despite all of its suffering, can be trusted. Reality at its foundation is good. Reality, God, love is on your side. That's a foundational trust that it's okay. A lot of people who go to church every Sunday don't have that foundational trust. In fact, what characterizes their life is a massive mistrust of almost everything. You can't mistrust everything and trust God. How you trust is how you trust. It's all one act of faith. If you have a cynical attitude toward everything and everybody, you probably also, I'm sorry to say, will have a cynical attitude toward God. How you do anything is how you do everything. Life is of one piece. But at any rate, we see him then returning to his first goal, back to the daughter of the synagogue official. And he makes a one-line statement that I think is not just to the crowd here, but frankly, to all of us. The child is not dead, but asleep. Death is not final. As we say in the funeral liturgy, life is not ended, it merely changes. And this little 12-year-old girl is a symbol again of all of us. When we think we've died, when you think your relatives and friends have died, he says to you what he says to the little girl and her family. The child is not dead, but merely asleep. It is inside of this universal trust that you and I live and hope and have faith.